It's The Huddle, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Good afternoon. You're in The Huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN, all unaccounted for. Brady's here. Rich is here. Artie's here. How you doing, handsome? What's going on, big boy?
Boy, you sound better than ever 3,000 miles away, and you look good, too.
I know. Don't yeah. I look good?
You no look great on, in your Speedo there, yeah.
Speedo and... I had to put a towel down on my seat there, so I, well, whatever.
the only thing that Rich, I've never seen Rich as happy as he is not having to listen to you call
wow.
coaches on your son's behalf pre-show.
Wow.
Yeah, it's an Arnie-free hour from 3 to 4 every day for 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, those days are done. He's going to Kent State. So
right. Yeah, but then right. you're working on what family member are you working on next?
Yeah.
The niece.
I should make a business out of this is what I should do.
The niece, the basketball player, is she?
She's going to Oberlin.
Okay, so you're all set.
Yeah.
What are you
going
to do now?
I tried to push her on Vermont, but, you know, that didn't work out very well. So, well. You know, she had to go to Oberlin. Had to go ahead and go play there. Hey, I want to tell you, I was playing basketball down at Venice. And you'll love this story. I was playing 2-on-2, and, you know, the guys I was playing against were a little bit jerky. I didn't like them at all. But one guy was good, and the other guy was, like, really physically fit. I guess he played 4 years of football at Notre Dame and 1 year at Ball State. So, you know, he was pushing me around a little bit. And I didn't like it.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it. He wasn't good at basketball, but he was pushing me and shoving me. So I was being jerkish back to him, believe it or not. After the game, I find out I work with them at Fox Sports. So, and I was being a total knucklehead to them. Oh, my goodness. I was so embarrassed. But, you know, what can you do? That teaches you a lesson. You know
what I
mean? I
just can't picture you playing on Muscle Beach, playing basketball.
Yeah.
You.
I know.
Did you play shirts and skins? I hope not.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Please tell me you were shirts. Or did they set it up that way?
No, we wanted to be skins. We got to choose.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I mean, when you got it flaunted, right? Is that what they say?
So I assume it's 78 degrees and there isn't a cloud in the sky, unlike this place.
Actually, the sun is trying to fight through the June gloom is what they call that, even though it's not June. I think it's like about 70, 71, 72, a little bit. See, it's a little bit more chilly here by the ocean. That is inland, so it's a little bit. It's about 10 degrees to 15 degrees, a little cooler. So we have a little bad out here.
Boy, it sucks to be you. I woke up to an inch and a half of snow in my front yard in Jericho today.
What? Stop it!
No, absolutely.
10 inches of snow in Lake Placid today, Arnie.
Yeah, almost a foot.
Get out of here! So what is going on?
It's going to be 81 and sunny though on Wednesday. so don't worry.
Welcome to May.
Unbelievable. Hey, I want to ask you, guys are the baseball geeks, and they put up a poll. I was watching the Angel-Yankee game.
Yeah.
Did you see the poll they put up, Brady? Did you see that?
No, I don't remember off the top of my head.
It was like, who was going to have the best career? Forget about, World Series or anything like that. Just number-wise, who will have the best career when their careers are done? The four people were Trout, Ohtani, Pujols and Judge, you know, obviously the Angels and the Yankees, they had Judge dead last.
Wow.
out of the four. Dead last out of the four.
I would say, well.
Ohtani, no way.
Right now.
No way, Ohtani. Well, no, not right now. Just.
No, I know. I'm saying at projection right now, I would say that Judge is above Ohtani. But if Ohtani continues to do both, then that gives him a higher opportunity to make an impact. But I would say Ohtani's fourth out of that. I would say.
Absolutely.
Man, Trout and Pujols 1-2 is an interesting debate, though, given that all Pujols is about to hit 3,000 hits, going to have 600 homers in his career. I think he was a Gold Glover earlier in his career. He also stole some bases early. I think Trout's going to have the best career, then Pujols, then Judge, then Ohtani.
Wow. I mean, that's exactly the order they had. I thought they were just being homers because I'm like, they got to have Judge out there. Can you imagine by the time his career is done, he could be the all-time home run leader? What is wrong with you guys?
Well,
he will be the all-time baseball home run leader.
Who will, Judge?
Yeah, if he could continue on a pace like he did last year.
Oof.
Yes, if he continues at that rate, he'll be a great home run hitter. But Trout, to me, is going to be one of the top 10 all-time players, maybe even higher. I am that. He's going to be a 15-time All-Star. He's going to be a multiple-time MVP. He's going to have 500 homers. He's going to steal 400 bases. He's going to be a 10-time Gold Glove winner at some, throughout his career. He's going to be one of the best resumes we've ever seen when it's all said and done.
And Arnie, check out Pujols' St. Louis numbers. I mean, it was single year, same thing. 42 homers, 130 RBI, hit 300. Yeah, I mean, he was in the Hall of Fame after about 7 years.
So. I didn't even know the Angels had a team until this weekend. I mean, you get buried out here.
Yeah.
If you're not in the Dodgers, you're buried.
Well,
you really
are. Look what the Yankees and Red Sox did sweeping through Anaheim the last 2 weeks. My goodness, Angels! I don't think the Angels won a game in either series.
The Angels are 3-9 in their last 12. They started out 13-3.
And the Yankees are red hot. Matter of fact, we got a lot to get to, Brady. So, Tony, what's coming up on the show?
Well, remember, first off, tomorrow you're going to miss it, but we'll be there. Burger Bar Trivia Night in Colchester, 7:30 to 9:30. Yeah, Arnie, and since people were giving their number out to you last week, it looks like they're going to have to settle for Rich this week.
Oh, so, that's too bad.
Trivia Night tomorrow.
Actual single, young, good-looking person.
Yeah, that's true.
Trivia Night tomorrow, Burger Bar Colchester. Mistake of the Day is up for grabs again this week if you want to get in and call us on something, you can, 802-655-6672. Winner's going to get that baseball cap thanks to Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, where they help small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. As for what's coming up today, we'll get into the Giants draft in about 10 minutes from now. We'll get you ready for both the Celtics and the Bruins. We'll talk about the Patriots draft, Monday Mirages. But first, just a little bit of small talk. We are so lucky to have just the realm of sports that we're interested in here in this area. And right now, every single team is relevant. They're not necessarily all good. The Giants aren't playing. They weren't good, but they're all relevant.
Canadians.
Yeah, well, I don't consider that right in this region. Ooh. I just don't. I'm sorry.
Don't tell St. Albans that.
I'm sorry. But what had your interest most piqued this weekend? Because I watched nearly every minute of the draft. All 3 days. But I also watched all of Game 7. I watched a lot of the Red Sox this weekend, some of the Yankees. I watched some of the Bruins on Saturday. I mean, I was into everything, but I was on the draft more than anything.
I was the same way. It was all NFL draft, especially after what happened on Thursday and all the trades. And I thought the Patriots got off to a good start. I was completely intrigued if they were going to take a quarterback with their last pick, which I thought they would. I just had the wrong quarterback. So I was all in on this draft. I'm usually not in completely on every NFL draft. And my partner on Sunday on Fox is a big draft nut. He looks back 4 years. He was looking 4 years ago and drafted out that class. It was graded out that class. It was nuts. But I was all into that. The Celtics, I kept my eye on in the second half as long as it didn't get the single digits. And the Bruins made it easy, but they were phenomenal. I was into that also. I wasn't much into the Yankees, but I was keeping an eye on the Red Sox.
Well, you know what my answer is going to be, Brady.
You were watching every second of the Bruins game.
Yes.
That's a definite.
Yeah. And absolutely none of the NFL draft at any point. So
you didn't watch any of the draft on Saturday or Sunday.
Couldn't care
on
less.
Saturday.
Couldn't care less. It doesn't mean anything, and I just don't care.
You realize you are so far in the minority.
Oh, absolutely. Every year.
Of sports fans.
Right.
Because,
right.
And look, this is that's a typical Patriot fan response.
I knew it. I love stirring you up.
This is a typical. See, the Giant fans love the draft because it's a chance to reboot the team and it's the first chance of your first thought of rebirth for next season. Patriot fans like, we're in the Super Bowl. We're picking at the end of the round. Doesn't matter. Oh, in Bill we trust. I'll kiss the rings.
No, look, we had this debate the other day. I like the idea of four picks in two rounds, but of course that didn't happen, as it never does. We have to wait another year or two in some cases for the payoff. I guess I get burnt out on it. I start seeing Mel Kiper the second week of February, and it's just like, no.
You were forbidden then to be a Sony Michel fan. You're forbidden from being that because he's going to be a star right off the bat for you guys.
Well, good.
That's how great he is.
No, that's great. Or he won't. We don't know.
No, he will.
Because
he's never
like everyone else that was drafted this weekend, they haven't played one down in the NFL. So we have no idea.
I flipped my lucky coin and it came up, he will have a good year. So that's how I know, huh?
Well, I hope you're right. You might be right and you might not. But yeah, Bruins. I mean, look, I'm emptying out my house still. I've got more crap in my house and I'm moving. So I spent the entire weekend, day and night, pretty much just lifting stuff into the garage and getting stuff hauled out. I literally am not going to have anything left except a television, a mattress, and a car by the end of this move.
You are the anti-hoarder. Have you ever?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Have you ever watched Hoarders on A&E?
Yes.
It's disgusting.
Yes. You are the anti-hoarder.
I am. I don't need anything. All of a sudden, I hit 50 a couple of years ago, and we were talking about this before the show. And some light went off for me at the age of 50 saying, don't keep anything. Look, you don't need all this crap.
Look, I get the minimalist lifestyle. I get downsizing. I get moving to a smaller place as your kids move out, all that kind of stuff. I understand all that. But to tell me that nothing material matters to you, that just feels wrong to me. It's one thing if you don't have a collection of 85 hats like I have. It's another thing.
And shirts.
It's another thing to not have, I don't even know, do you have photos of your family around?
Hundreds of them all over the place, but they're all they're all organized and in a box.
What? Yeah. Are you going to get rid of the... all the baseball cards from the attic, because I'll take those if you don't want, if you're renouncing those.
Yes, no, I'm thinking of getting rid of those.
Yes,
but no,
I will
anything
take those.
To do with my family, especially my daughter, I still somewhere in a box, I haven't been able to find them, are my 18 marathon finisher medals.
Okay.
So I'm not going to throw those away because I can't walk because I got those medals.
So,
but the point being that what I'm trying to get at with this was I was just getting rid of everything. And so everything was background noise to me, but I couldn't believe the amount of stuff on for sports. But yeah, Bruins. Unbelievable. Every single time I heard somebody yelling in the next room, it was like, oh, they just scored again.
I'm going to take, if you're going to give away those 1970s baseball cards, I will take every one you have.
Well, I just got rid of all the free stuff in my front yard.
Well,
people didn't take anything.
The baseball cards weren't in it.
Maybe because they were soaked. I had a rug out there, this beautiful rug. It's just soaked. Gee, why would no one take that?
You give
shocking.
Me-
Usually people pull over when it says free stuff and take it no matter if they need it or not. Yeah.
You give me the baseball cards. And Arnie, I have to say this too. I found myself last night when everything was kind of unwinding watching the MLB Network. I watched a fascinating special on the 1988 Orioles that started out 0-21.
Yes, they were awful.
For some reason, I knew it was the Orioles, and I knew it was in the 80s, but for some reason it came to me, I thought there was like 0-16. 0-21, they started talking about, Arnie, you always ask this question, things that will never be broken. Well, Johnny Vandermeer's two back-to-back no-hitters, and Cy Young's 711 wins or whatever in complete game. 0-21 might never be broken again either to start a season.
Too many bad teams in baseball. So you're eventually going to play, you know, if you're lucky enough, you'll get a series with one of those bad teams, and you'll get one. Usually there's got to be one star, or actually one, you know, major pitcher that could go ahead and pitch it to a victory. You know what? Now that I said that, Rich, who's the ultimate worst team with the best pitcher? Do you remember what's the worst thing? What's the first thing that comes to mind when I said that?
Steve Carlton, Philadelphia Phillies.
You got it. What did they have? 60? Do you know this, Brady? Yeah. They had like 60 wins, and he had 20-plus wins.
27 wins he had that year for a last-place team. Talk about records that'll never be broken.
And that Orioles team had two Hall of Famers. Cal Ripken and Eddie Murray. And I think Rafael Palmeiro was on that team at the beginning of his career. And if not for the steroids, he would have been a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I'll have to look it up. But Boddicker, McGregor, I'm trying to think of some of the pitchers that might have been around.
Kennedy was the catcher.
Rich, a friend of mine, actually, we were friends and we worked together, was a pitcher on that Baltimore Orioles team that you would know. I don't know if you know him, Brady. Steve Stone.
Oh, yeah. Stone Pony.
Isn't he a Cubs broadcaster?
White Sox.
Oh, White Sox. Okay.
He's done both. Yeah, he's actually done both right now.
He's doing both at the same time.
Trick. He did it in the past, but he's a brilliant brilliant baseball mind. It's unbelievable what he comes up with.
But you're right. I mean, and imagine what that must be like for demoralized. I mean, 0-21. Your season's over.
Well, and Fred Lynn was on that team, and Billy Ripken, Cal's brother, was on the team. And Cal Ripken Sr. was the manager of that team at the beginning of the year. They fired him 6 games into the season.
So now we know how the Cincinnati Reds feel right now.
And the Royals, who the Red Sox will see tonight.
Although they've won 2 in a row. Of course, we get another team that was on a roll coming into Fenway. Look what Tampa did.
By the way, Brady, if you Google radio talk show host sleeps on – you know, up on top of one of the billboards. That's what happened when they started off 0-21. He said he would not, I forget who it was, said he would not come down until the Orioles won a game, and he thought it would take like a week.
Oh, yeah, yes. That guy was in there too, yes.
So he was up there for, that's like a month, isn't it? That's like 3.5 weeks.
He was out
of
there.
Baseball.
He was out there forever. Oh, you know what? I was wrong. Rafael Palmeiro didn't even get to the Baltimore until 94. He was with the Cubs at that point. But there was a dead ringer for Rafael Palmeiro in all these highlights. I'm trying to like decipher who everyone is based on the highlights. I can't believe Palmeiro didn't even get there until 94.
I know it. And Mike Boddicker was an opening day starter. And Terry Kennedy, who was the first ever manager of the Vermont Expos in 1994, was in the starting lineup. I'm just looking at it. Freddie Lynn, Eddie Murray. I mean, those are some pretty good players.
Oh, yeah.
Billy Ripken, Cal Ripken, Joe Orsolak. Remember him, Arnie?
Yes.
Rick Shue, Larry Sheets, and Jeff Stone. That's not a bad lineup.
Not to be going 0-21. Oh, hey, by the way, Brady, because I know we have to get the break, I was just listening to Doug Gottlieb, who says, coming up next on his show, big deal, little deal, or no deal.
Wow.
yes, I'm thinking because they heard me talk about it. One of my producers took it from me and gave it to Gottlieb.
So. Wow.
Yeah, they totally
took it from us. What is it?
Yes. I'm sorry. Or didn't I come up with big deal, little deal, or no deal?
No, I did.
Are you sure?
Yes.
I'm just kidding. Rich, who came up with it? Back me up on this, Rich.
Oh, it was definitely somebody that's in this room right now.
Exactly. All right. Speaking about coming up next, we'll get to the New York Giants draft. We'll get a little bit to the Red Sox. That is next. You are in the huddle right here on 103 ESPN.
Go Lake and Wingo.
The guys continue to break down the NFL draft. What is the fallout? And which teams improved themselves the most over the weekend?
Weekday mornings from 6 to 10. Only on 101.3 ESPN. Rich, Arnie, and Brady are back. And they're already starting to argue. The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. A busy Monday. What a great weekend it was for sports. So much going on. NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, baseball in full swing, NFL draft. I mean, some people complain, oh, it's slow and stuff like that. No, it's not like it's in the middle of the summer, guys. This is what you live for if you're a sports fan. A little bit of everything, a sprinkling of everything.
And have you seen tonight's schedule? I mean, it's a Monday. We've got Celtics game one.
Right.
We've got Bruins game two. We got the Red Sox against Kansas City. I mean, are the Revs playing tonight?
Well, you got the draft that just ended. I mean,
well, No, but I mean that. Right. But I'm talking about tonight because Monday is usually like sports night off.
Yeah.
You know, other than Monday Night Football. Amazing.
Arnie, with the Giants. Because Rich and I were talking earlier, we were talking about the Giants draft, and I'll ask you first, since you're supposedly the big Giant fan, what did you make of the Giants draft overall?
Well, look, and I've said this before, after they took Saquon Barkley, I like him a lot. I still would have traded the pick and see what I could have gotten. But that aside, he's going to be a feature back. He's going to be tremendous. I mean, I compare him to like a Herschel Walker type. You got strength and speed, and people are going to bring up, oh, what about the Rutgers game where I think he had 19 yards or something. I mean, can you imagine, Brady, you made over 100 starts in baseball, and I judge you on one start?
Yeah.
Who knows what happened in that game? Did Rutgers sell it on the run? I don't know. They play over their heads. I mean, it's a little bit of a rivalry. I don't know, and I really don't care at this point because I'm not judging the kid on just one game. I'm judging him all on his career, and he's just going to be, I mean, tremendous. It's something the Giants have lacked, and that way Eli Manning isn't going to have to put it up, and it's going to improve his numbers. Now, the second pick, and I want to know what you think, because we talk about guys that come from small schools, and it was Will Hernandez, the kid from UTEP, the offensive guard, but what about kids that come from bad programs? UTEP is I watched one of their games against Arizona. They're a horrible program, but he's supposedly one of the second best guard in the draft. So, look, I like him. I just don't know about coming from a real bad program, if that's a real bad thing, or maybe that benefits him when he comes to camp. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it benefits him that if he could shine through on a bad team, you start to wonder, well, how good could he be with NFL coaching? But then you look at the position he plays. offensive linemen come in so raw now that you don't, you know, you're looking for closer to finished products to be impact players because it just seems it takes a while to coach up a majority of your offensive line. As far as the Giants go as a whole, look, most of us, we can all project that Barkley's going to be pretty good. Outside of that, outside of the first round, none of us really know how good or bad players are going to be. So I just look at the Giants and say, what positions did they have needs at and what positions did they take? And from that standpoint, I like what the Giants did a lot. Even if you ignored the rounds people were drafted in, because I wouldn't have taken Barkley, Rich, as high as they did. But they got a running back, which they needed. They got an offensive lineman, which they needed. They also went out and they got two defensive tackles, which they needed to rush the passer and to help clog up the run. They got a linebacker that they needed, and they got a backup quarterback slash a guy who maybe can be your quarterback of the future. With the fewest picks in the draft, which they came into with at six, they got a lot of the positions they needed, and for that I appreciate it.
Oh, it's definitely a win now. I mean, Gettleman and the crew should be applauded for it, and I'm seeing A's, A-minuses, B-pluses across the grade boards on pretty much every network. I mean, you talk about addressing needs. I sort of agree with Arnie that they could have gotten a serious haul for that number two pick, but now you've got the running back, and he's going to be running with a front line of Will Hernandez, most likely, and Nate Solder, both on the left side. So you talk about addressing a need. I mean, I have to imagine Eli Manning is very, very pleased with his draft.
Well, you know what? You said he gets A's and B's. Well, you know what? What does that really equate to? Does that give him, instead of three wins, four wins? Does that mean they're going to win the division or compete for the division? Or, I mean, even stay out of last place in the division? I don't know. Or is that great for 4 years down the line? I want to see some of these guys play now. Patriots got three or four guys that actually are going to make significant playing time this year. When I look at the Giants, Hernandez is going to play. We know that. So Saquon Barkley. And I hear maybe B.J. Hill, from the kid from NC State, may get significant playing time. So I don't know how many are going to come in and step in right away, but hopefully it'll be at least three.
This draft to me represented exactly what Dave Gettleman said that he believes in. And Dave Gettleman came out from the start. He told you who he was and what he believed in, and this draft was a carbon copy of that philosophy. He said he wanted to get a Hall of Fame player with the second pick in the draft, so that led us to believe right away that they weren't going to trade it. They wanted somebody that was going to make a massive impact. They got what they thought was that in Barkley. Then you look at it and say, he came in here stressing the importance of having big players up front were needed to compete, a big line on both sides, like the Carolina team that got to the Super Bowl just 3 years ago, and they go out and in six picks, they take three linemen, one on the offensive side, two on the defensive side. This whether you like the draft or not, you have to appreciate that Dave Gettleman told you he had a philosophy, and he stuck with it.
And the other thing.
Go ahead, Rich. Go ahead, Rich. I got to rip him for that, but go ahead, Rich.
Oh, no. Keep the flow going.
I was just going to say.
Don't let me get in your way.
When you come in with a philosophy, you're coming in with a different philosophy from another team that needed all completely different needs. You got to come in and see what the Giants' needs are. You got to come up maybe with a different philosophy. You know, this is an old school where you pass it down. 10 passes. I did it 10 passes on this team. And when I come into basketball, it's going to be 10 passes on this team. And I don't care if we've got a running team or a tall team. You got to change your attitude a little bit. I don't care if that's what you did 5-10 years ago or even last year. You got to change. You got to know this is the Giants needed a lot of holes to fill. I don't want to hear about your damn philosophy about getting one star and have all the rest of the holes. I'm not buying into that, guys.
I disagree because look, the one thing that has stayed consistent about football through time is that you build the team from the interior out. The good teams build the team from the interior out. We saw what the Giants tried to do last year, build it from the perimeter in, and that blew up in their faces. So he came in and identified this team needs a strong line on both sides of the ball. He helped address that. And then you talk about not needing what Carolina needed. You're right. When he came into Carolina, they needed a quarterback, and that team took Cam Newton number one overall, and they built the team around him. He had every opportunity to go and build this team around a quarterback of the future like they did in Carolina, and he didn't do that. So I don't think it's as similar as you want it to be.
He didn't do that because he was afraid of upsetting Eli Manning. Same way that the Patriots were upset about upsetting Tom Brady. So I don't know if that's a Gettleman problem or somebody else's problem. or the owner problem or whatever. But that's exactly why he didn't take a quarterback high.
Yeah, and speaking of taking a quarterback, I mean, I'm surprised to see Laletta fall to 108 and the Giants scooped him up in the fourth round. I think that's a pretty good pick. They say he doesn't have an NFL arm yet, but, I mean, a couple of years under, you know, Eli Manning, I mean, if they were going to go after a quarterback, you can't take a Sam Darnold or use that number two pick on your quarterback and sit on the bench for 3 years while Eli Manning is out there. Were you surprised, Arnie, A, that Laletta fell that far, and B, is that it for Davis Webb?
Fourth round's not falling far.
108?
Look, well, that sounds about right. I mean, Mason Rudolph, the kid from Oklahoma State, was taken in the third round, and, yeah, and the Steelers actually had to trade up to get him, and he has much better numbers and a better of a pro prospect, at least according right. to the experts out there. So that sounds just about right for him. I'm not surprised right. there. I am surprised that the Giants went ahead and took him, though. That was a surprise there. Yeah. We want to get into the Red Sox, Brady. Is that what we want to do, or what's going on?
Yeah. So Red Sox, they had lost 5 of 7 at one point over the last week. They get a win yesterday. It was a needed win. They come back from 3-0. It wasn't pretty, but Rick Porcello threw 116 pitches, pitched into the eighth inning, and he saved that bullpen a lot and went straight from Porcello to Kimbrel. Red Sox with a big win yesterday.
And I can't believe I'd ever say this, but I'm glad the Tampa Bay Rays are gone for a little while as far as the Red Sox go. They are a pain in the butt, man. They just are. And even when the Red Sox were jumping out and jumping all over them the first 10 games of the season, whatever, every game was like pulling teeth. It was like 3-2, 2-1. I'm not surprised they had won 9 in a row until yesterday. They should have won that game yesterday. And as far as the Sox, the offense has just gone south for now. I mean, it's just a phase. But, you know, while this phase is going on, the Yankees have gained 5 games yeah. in the standings over the last 10 days.
I was going to ask you that. Red Sox have a 20-7 record. I mean, that's about as really as good as it's going to get, even though they started better than that. That's about as good as it's going to get. If you would have said before the start of the season, if I could put you 20-7, you would have said, where do I sign up?
Yep.
20-7 is the glass half full or half empty. They're off to a great start, so you feel good. Or they're off to a great start, but damn, the Yankees are only 2 games behind, so that's not a very good sign. The Yankees will easily overpass them. What do you think?
I think you have to be ecstatic right now if you're the Red Sox, especially when you consider what they've gone through in this first 25-plus games. Xander Bogaerts has already been on the DL. You had J.D. Martinez start slow. Yeah. Now, he's certainly picked it up, hitting over 300, and he was 4-4 yesterday. But your big acquisition didn't have an impact for probably the first 10 games of the year, I would say is fair. You had Andrew Benintendi do nothing for the first week of the season. Mookie Betts has been in and out of the lineup a couple of times with some various ailments. Drew Pomeranz was on the DL and has still struggled. You still don't have Tyler Thornburg in the bullpen, and here you are at 20-7, and you've endured to this point a suspension to one of your most critical relievers in Joe Kelly.
Yeah, and I hope Mookie Betts is okay. How about this weekend, though? You lose Mookie Betts and Jaylen Brown on the same weekend to a hamstring. Those are like the two of the most important athletes in all of Boston right now, and they both go down in the same weekend to the same injury. But yeah, no, 20-7, absolutely, I'll take it. It's just in this kind of what have you done for me lately society we live in, I see more of the what did you say it was 3 out of 5 or whatever,
and it was guys 5 of 7,
5 of 7, and guys just are not hitting. But I will take 20-7. But Arnie, you said you sounded absolutely sure that the Yankees are just going to pass them and run away and hide.
Yeah. Well, and you know what's so funny about that is because the Red Sox actually are the best team on the road. That's, I mean, right there up there, the Astros are like a half game behind them. That's what you want to be to win a World Series. But, I mean, the Yankees have won, 9 in a row. You knew eventually they were going to turn it on. I mean, I could see them prolonging a streak like this more so than I see the Red Sox, because I'm still not trusting that starting pitching has been so phenomenal, like the second best in all of baseball. And eventually, I think that's going to go south. I don't know if the Yankees' bats, eventually they'll have a couple of bad games, but I think they're going to have a continue on a great season. They're such a deep lineup. I think their bats are going to carry them throughout the whole year. I don't know about the Red Sox arms, though.
No, but we said the Yankees' bats. I mean, we talked preseason about every game's going to be 11-8. Well, it hasn't been 11-8. It's been 11-1 for the last 2 weeks. I mean, they're doing exactly, and they're doing it mostly without Stanton right in the middle of the lineup. I mean, everybody, top to bottom, the two kids in the 8-9 slot, and Judge has just been out of this world, and Didi has been MVP caliber.
In that in that Yankees win streak, the starting rotation has actually, the Yankees, just the team in general, has a 1.76 ERA over the last nine games. That's incredible. You expand it out to the beginning 25 games of the season. The Red Sox starter is the second best ERA at 2.83. I think the Red Sox pitching has a much better chance of sustaining itself, because I think Pomeranz, number one, he can't be as bad as he's been in the previous two, in his first two starts. But even if he's, you know, a league average fourth or fifth starter, that's still going to continue to be better than what the Yankees can roll out there.
And by the way, Rich, I guess we found out that, you know, people say golfers are not athletes, or race car drivers are not athletes, because, you know, you could be like Phil Mickelson, you could be big and fat and still play golf. And, you know, well, I don't know what to say about pitchers, but I saw CC Sabathia up close. Is that guy pushing three bills, or am I imagining, is it the TV that's doing that?
No,
I don't know.
He's been around three bills for a while. I mean, and by the way, since when is Phil Mickelson fat?
Well, he's gained some weight.
Has he?
Yeah, he's put on some pounds.
Luckily, we're both chiseled gods.
Yes, so. Exactly. Yeah. I saw that hit I forget who got it. It might have been Trout, where he hit it to the right side, and Sabathia didn't even have a chance. I think I could have beat him out the first base. He had no chance of getting the first base there.
Oh, well, that's why CC said, don't bunt. That's what he said last year about the Red Sox.
Yeah. He's just large and in charge. But, yeah, Red Sox, I guess you got to be happy. They're easily the best plus-minus ratio in all of baseball. But, I mean, the Yankees right on their heels. And the Yankees got off to that slow start, too. So yeah,
and
I imagine. Yeah.
And how much fun is this Yankees-Houston series going to be starting tonight? And then the Yankees are hosting the Red Sox, I think, early next week.
That's
going to
be great. It's going to be great.
All right. When we get back, we'll get a little of the Celtics, all right? Obviously, a big series with Philadelphia nationally. I'll tell you what they're going to say nationally about this series. We'll talk about it locally. That's coming up next. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Go Lake and Arnie injured himself playing basketball. Again. How is it that he never sprains his mouth? This is The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in The Huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. It's a Monday. Dragging yourself around on a Monday. Be careful out there, of course. All unaccounted for. The Celtics get a big win, game number seven. So they move on. Impressive. It just seems like every time I'm looking up somebody, they're just dropping like flies. It's so impressive. Brad Stevens has to be one of the most underrated coaches in the NBA, if not the most underrated coach in the NBA. Unbelievable.
And how ironic is it that last year at this time we were talking about, is he overrated? Because the team couldn't win on the road in the playoffs, and they were really, really struggling.
Still can't.
We were talking about them just not being able to win the big one under Brad Stevens, and it had been that way for all of the previous years. But the winning percentage every year has improved for Boston under Stevens, and you can only get to so high, but man, he is impressive.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, that winning percentage is going to continue to increase. Can you imagine this team next year with all these guys back healthy at the start, and knock on wood in that situation? But, I mean, we were just talking about this during the commercial break here, Arnie. The Celtics have the Sacramento 2019 number one. They probably have the Memphis 2021 pick. Philadelphia's got the Lakers pick most likely next year, which is the 11. I mean, don't you get the feeling here we're talking Sixers and Celtics for a long time starting now?
Well, first of all, you know, we were talking about this series on my national show. I want you to know something. The entire world is on the Philadelphia 76er bandwagon. Yeah. I mean, it's disgusting because I'm everything against the Philadelphia 76ers, the way they've done it, the trust the process, tanking, getting lucky with all the draft picks. Everybody is on that Philadelphia 76er bandwagon. In Vegas, the line opened up at about 2 in favor of Philadelphia, now up to 4.5. 70% of the money is being bet on Philadelphia. Everybody is either liking Philadelphia, betting Philadelphia, or hoping Philadelphia wins. Nobody giving any love to the Boston Celtics other than the Celtic fans, guys.
And the reason why, most likely, is because look at the disparity this year in these matchups. When Kyrie Irving was on the court versus off the court. When Kyrie Irving played, the Celtics were plus 26 against the Sixers when Kyrie Irving was on the court, When Kyrie Irving was off the court, they were minus three. Well, he's going to be off the court the entire series here. So when we can talk about, oh, the biggest keys to the game are this, this, or this, but the biggest key to this series might simply be Kyrie Irving is not here, and he was the single biggest difference maker in this matchup through the course of a regular season.
And I mean, you look at these matchups, you're going to have Horford and Embiid. I'm sure Horford's going to try to bring Embiid away from the basket.
It's going to be Horford against Simmons, it looks like.
Really? Well, I thought Ojeleye was going to end up on Simmons, and that to me is like, that's a nightmare waiting to happen.
Oh, based on what I read, I mean, look, obviously this is fluent to change, but it could very well be Horford on Simmons and then Baines trying to body up Embiid down low.
He's going to foul out in about 3 minutes. I mean, Baines against Embiid?
For at least part of the time.
You made the point about the plus-minus on Kyrie, but the point we did make was the Celtics have learned to play without Kyrie now. Not that they're a better team. They've just learned how to play without him. So I think we got to give him a little bit of credit for that also. They've done a phenomenal job without their leader, you know?
I mean, we talked a little bit about it. I don't – you know I'm a Celtics fan. I don't see any way this thing goes – I don't think the Celtics win in or lose in seven, because that would mean they'd lose game seven in Boston, which I just don't see. I just don't think it's going to get that far. I think Philly wins it in six, maybe even five.
I'm excited. Wow. Yeah. I'm excited for this game. What's really disappointing, though, is I don't know about Jaylen Brown yet. It's not officially out as to whether he's going to play. It's pretty simple. It comes down to this. If he gets cleared, he'll play. If he doesn't get cleared, he won't play. It's not going to be about, is Jaylen Brown not tough enough to play, or did the Celtics push him to play when he shouldn't have? It's just going to come down to was he cleared or not. But to have game one at home where you're going to have the momentum and you're going to be missing arguably your best remaining player, then I think you're destined for a loss. If he doesn't play, they're destined for a loss. If he was playing at full strength, maybe you do win game one, and then you don't know what happens from there.
Well, the thing was, we can just say Brad Stevens has done an unbelievable job. They won their four home games against a decent Milwaukee team. But, man, without Jaylen Brown, he had two 30-point games in the Bucks series. He's a huge part. And, I mean, you can only take Rozier and Horford and Tatum so far against these matchups, and I just think Philadelphia's poised him. Not make it look easy, but certainly win it. Well, and let's not discount, Redick and Sarek and Bellinelli and Covington. I mean, it just bombs away with these
and
guys.
And Fultz.
Oh, yeah, the number one pick.
So,
by the way, if my organist was here, I'd go, dun, 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 dun. A little hockey time. Your Bruins, can you believe 6-2? I thought they'd be so burnt out and tired after that series with Toronto. Just forget about game one. It's done. They lose, and we'll see what happens in game two. If they can steal one, incredible. Oh, my good. Not only do they win game one, they pounded him. Boy, what a smack into the face.
Yeah, and one of the Tampa Bay goals was just preposterous. It was almost funny if I hadn't been a Bruins fan, and that tied the game at the time. I remember thinking, you can't allow that goal, but that's the rule about Tuukka's skate blade falling off, which was quite comical to watch. That being said, the key here is that top line really did a number. If you get that top line back and doing what they've been doing, and they definitely did it, I think the biggest surprise for me wasn't so much that Tampa didn't have their chances. Tuukka was just really, really good in that game. But I was shocked at the defense. I mean, guys like Hedman. They have a great veteran blue line core in Tampa. And they never showed up, especially in the second half of that game the other day.
And you know what's crazy, too, is that it feels like because of the final score that the Bruins dominated. The game was closer than the 6-2 represents because you look at that third period, there wasn't as much separation going into that third period.
Right.
The Lightning actually had as many shot attempts as the Bruins had shots on goal, or the other way around, rather. The Lightning, they were getting a ton of shots on goal, whereas the Bruins were struggling to even get shots up, period, even if they were blocked or wide or whatever. So the Lightning had some offensive chances. To your point, Tuukka Rask played very, very well, which is a welcome sight after a kind of an uneven round one. But for me, the key to it was Charlie McAvoy and Charlie McAvoy's comfort level, because he only played four games, remember, after that injury coming back before the playoffs. He played four games at the end of the regular season, and he talked about just being a little bit out of it in that first series. He's playing with this giant wrap on his knee, and he's finally ditched that. He said he feels 20 pounds lighter in his equipment, feels like he can finally be faster, not get beat to the puck as quick, or not get beat, with guys going around him. So Charlie McAvoy's playmaking ability and his confidence, I think, are a major thing moving forward.
Hey, let me tell you, they're one win away from winning the series. I hate to be like that.
I agree.
That they win game two, this is over. You wrap this thing up. You're even if you split at home, this thing is over.
That being said, if I'm Tuukka Rask, you better be a brick wall in that first period tonight because Tampa is coming out blazing.
I can imagine. I can only imagine on that.
I mean, another thing, you talk about that top line, and we've made the numbers continue to get more impressive. So Pastrnak, Bergeron, Marchand, 41 points combined in the Bruins' 5 wins, 0 in their 3 losses. Yeah. I mean, they had 11 points on Saturday alone.
Is that good or bad, though, by the way? Can you win a Stanley Cup with just your top line, or does another line have to step on up, or can you just keep it all on them?
I don't know. If you've been watching DeBrusque in these playoffs, what's he got, five, six goals, whatever he's got, Corrali. I mean, they've had a lot of guys playing well. They've scored a lot of goals. I mean, if you look at the Bruins just offensively, they put up a ton of goals in these playoff games, and the first line obviously scoring the majority of them, but everybody else is contributing too.
And then the Bruins, you talk about a lot of goals, Rich. If they can score, they've scored 6-plus goals in 2 consecutive games. If they can score 6-plus tonight, that would be their 3rd straight game. It would only be the 3rd time in franchise history they've ever done that, and the first time since 1977. So this offense is in rarefied air right now with what they're doing here, and just kind of the rate at which they're putting pucks in the back of the net.
By the way, is this just a better matchup than the Toronto series for some reason, or I shouldn't read so much into that 6-2 game?
Yeah, I was thinking about that the other day. I think what just happened is that Tampa just disappeared in the second half of that game. And I think everything's going to – there'll be a market correction tonight. I'm not saying they'll necessarily win, but you're going to have games like that where one team just looks better. And as Brady brought up, 6-2 is not at all indicative of how that game went.
But that's on the road. Jeez.
Yeah, and if you're Tampa, you absolutely have to come out tonight, first 5 minutes of the first period, and try to make a statement.
Yep.
And then you have to be smart also in making a statement. You can't do the things that Toronto did early in the series and take penalties and give that first line an opportunity to go and score more. But you absolutely need to come out on the offensive here and try to hold serve at home. Because if you go down 0-2, number one, it's pretty easy for us to say that's not a good indicator of future success. But it's not good for anybody. The Lightning are 1-3 ever in the playoffs when trailing 2-0. And that's a deficit. When you lose 2 at home, you generally don't come back from.
All right. And, Rich, who did they steal, real quick, since we're on hockey, who did they steal that game from, disallowing the overtime goals? That Vegas?
Yeah, Vegas. That was a tough one. I saw that replay about 20 times. That was a tough call, and that's about the first thing that's gone wrong for Vegas in their history.
No way that was goalie interference, so I'm going to go ahead and leave it at that. And did you see the goal they disallowed in the Capitals game by Pittsburgh?
Yes.
That was in. They showed a zoomed-in picture. That puck was in. What more do you want? That was in.
It is amazing to me that referees, especially in hockey, it's right there. I guess it is too in any sport, really, now with video replay permeating everything in sports. But it's right there. Look at it. What part of this is confusing to you?
Well, it was right there after we saw the picture, and then they enlarged it for us.
Well, that's what I mean. Isn't that what New York is seeing, too, or Toronto, or wherever they go to the replay?
I have another bite of my sandwich and drink my Diet Pepsi, and I could tell right there after that was a goal. Brady, what do we got coming up next?
Well, we'll get back into the NFL draft briefly. What did you make of the Shaquem Griffin story from start to finish?
All right, that is next. We finish off hour number one. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
The local slant on all things sports.
We know that everybody's going to be gunning for us.
It's The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in The Huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. Flying on by on a busy Monday. Very sunny out here in Southern California. Not too sunny back in Burlington, Vermont now, is it, guys?
No.
There hasn't been one crack of blue sky since Saturday.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, since I left, huh? Is that what you're
saying? And it still rained on Saturday, but it got nice for about a half an hour.
Right. But yesterday, Arnie, you didn't miss a thing. I don't think it ever stopped raining yesterday.
No, and then it poured all night.
And then snowed.
Yeah. And I watched a Jersey Shore marathon last night. So it was great. Season 3 was extremely volatile. Ron and Sam were even more nuts than I remember.
Jersey Shore is like a way of life out here in L.A. People, like, love that show. They just, like, it's disgusting. I hear
they
people
had
talking
the,
about it.
They had the original. They had Laguna Beach and the O.C. out there.
Oh, jeez. I'm sorry. I didn't know that. I apologize.
Nice going, Arnie.
I'm so sorry, guys. I didn't mean to screw that up. Tell me, what do you think about the Shaquem Griffin story? You must love it, Brady, so why don't you start?
Yeah, Shaquem Griffin, so a lot of people know the story now, but he's the linebacker, defensive end, safety, kind of all-in-one hybrid from Central Florida. And he plays with one full arm, and he's got a short arm with no fingers for his right. I believe it's his right, if I'm not mistaken. But nonetheless, he gets drafted by the Seahawks early on in the fifth round. I'm pumped for it. Yes, it's a great human interest story. It's cool that he's going to play with his twin brother, who's also on the Seahawks. I think the Seahawks are pretty creative defensively, and I think they can find a way to utilize his skill set because he does have a very good skill set. He's not simply drafted because of it's a feel-good story. He's a good player. The thing I had the biggest problem with was the NFL knew he wasn't going to get drafted until at least day two, probably day three, and they had him out at the green room sitting there for 2 days. I didn't like that.
Well, you know, that's his choice. He didn't have to go ahead and take it. Maybe he wanted the publicity or, you know, he wanted to do anything to get drafted. I don't know if he would have been drafted at all. Maybe they could have signed him as a free agent after the draft, and or maybe they didn't want to take that chance. Physically, he's strong enough. I saw him put up the weight at the, the combine or whatever
the combine.
It was when he had the prosthesis. So physically... matter of fact, he put up more than, the kid from Oklahoma who was taken ahead of him. So, look, I'm happy for him. I think it's great. Is it wrong for me to say that, you know, can you play with just one hand? Is it like JPP where it's going to be wrapped up in a cast or something, I guess, is what's going to happen there? Is that what
it wasn't in college?
Do you have to do that in the NFL or no? He'll just play it like that bear or what?
Yeah, just play a bear.
Hell, Jim Abbott pitched with one arm.
Yes, I saw Jim Abbott do that. Yeah, he switched gloves and all that. So, yeah. I mean, physically he's strong enough. I don't know how much of a difference maker he'll be, but I think it's a great story.
Now, you just mentioned that he made the choice to be in the green room or whatever it's called.
Yeah, if you get invited, you don't
true?
Have to go.
I mean, was he told by the NFL that he should be there because he might be a first-round pick?
No, they invite him there. They invite a group of people who they think are going to be first-round picks, and then they do invite a guy in his case who's a great human interest story.
Huh.
And I look,
it's like they're using him.
I understand that he wants to be there, and maybe part of him is saying, well, look, me being here will help bring awareness to kids who have been told they can't accomplish something. If that's the story, then I'll back off on my criticism. But yes, I feel like the NFL invited him there, knowing full well he wasn't going to get drafted on day one.
Why did he have to be there for day one? Everybody knew that he wasn't going to get drafted on day one. There wasn't a mock draft that had him even day one or day two. So I don't know why he had to be there so early. They could have set it up where he showed up on the last day, and there was plenty to talk about in the first 2 days. So I'm not exactly sure why they did that, you know?
Yeah, to me it felt like what you said, that the NFL was profiting from him being there, and they just wanted to keep showing shots of him in the green room waiting. Is this the day? Is this the moment where Shaquem Griffin gets drafted? I was turned off by that.
Big Mike and McGillicuddy, same thing happened to Aaron Rodgers and Geno Smith, and Shaq Griffin will prove us all wrong. He has been his whole life. Also, first-time texter, hey, Brady, I like cats. I think it's his left arm. Mistake of the day? ? Great story. Jeff G. in Essex. Did you say it was his right or
what? The wrong arm.
I said I thought it was his right, I believe. I didn't say I know for 1,000% sure that it's his right arm.
People will do anything to win.
I love it, though. I love it. Where they try to get it, find this on the mistake. Hour one in the books. Brady will have a Sports Center update. We'll come back. Let's talk about how the Patriots looked in their draft, and I think it looked pretty damn good. So that's coming up next year in the Huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
If you think what Arnie says on the show is irritating, you should hear him during the commercial break. It's The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in The Huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. We're on the count of four. Brady and Rich back in Burlington, Vermont. I'm out in Los Angeles, of course, on a busy Monday, April 30th. My goodness, where's the time flown on by, guys? And so, you know, I really think you guys should come out here next year. We should do like a week or two from Southern California, especially if the Red Sox play the Dodgers or the Angels. How much fun would that be?
Or better yet, how about, I don't know, like January we head out there. Yeah. That might be better.
How about October, Red Sox-Angels playoff games? How about that?
Oh, jeez.
Maybe Patriots-Rams if it were ever happening.
Right. Wow.
I'm there.
No, I think you'd have a better time in the summer. You go see a little baseball. I know you want to get away from the bad weather, but, I mean, geez, though, coming out, seeing a little Dodgers or Angels. I don't like going to Anaheim, so I know you guys probably don't know the difference, but that's just a pain in the backside to get to. No, it's just, you know where it's located driving-wise. Brady, you do, actually, but it's such a pain in the backside to get to. You know,
it's funny you say that because my family is actually an original Angels season ticket holder.
Wow. Yeah, so, you mentioned that.
So my
but still tough to get to though.
Eight rows behind home plate, Rich. Eight rows directly behind home plate. My family has had Angels season ticket holder is had Angels season tickets since the first year that the Angels existed, and so what would happen was my family kept them for a long time, and my mom would use them growing up, and she'd go a bunch, and then my cousin would use them a bunch. Now my family sells them, and they sell them to the same guy every year, and he gives them back like four or six games throughout the season.
Perfect.
So a couple years ago when I went out there with my buddies, my cousin and I sat eight rows behind home plate.
Nice.
And it was Rangers against Angels. This is back in 2000. This is like 2009. I say a couple years ago. It's almost 10 years ago now. But Vlad Guerrero homered in that game. Mm. Pitching matchup, Jared Weaver and Kevin Millwood for that one.
Wow. So, Kevin Millwood.
Saw a few runs that day.
Kevin Millwood, part of a combined six or seven pitcher no hitter for the Mariners.
There's some trivia. So, really?
Brandon League pitched in that game for the M's. I was watching at Andrea's Pub in Half Moon, New York. I remember.
Look at
it
that.
Was against the Dodgers. Gosh.
How old were you? Seven?
23, maybe?
Yeah, 23. Wow. Not that long
Back
ago.
In the good old days.
Yeah. Hey, you'll like it real quick, and then we'll get to with the Patriots draft. I just want to say this, talking about season tickets. My old boss, his name was Terry Brennan. You could Google this. He was actually a star for Notre Dame football, I don't know, back in the 30s, 40s. I don't remember the year. And after he became a star, he was actually the head coach of Notre Dame football. So, I mean, how many people have been stars and coaches? Anyway, he gives us, me and another host, two tickets to the Notre Dame Air Force game. The other host gets so drunk that they kick us out and they take away the coach's season tickets. And they have to explain how the former star and head coach of Notre Dame football lost his season tickets because one of the hosts was drunk and got obnoxious in front of the alumni of Notre Dame. So
he's apparently his most famous thing is when asked if he thought he was too young to be named head coach of Notre Dame at the age of 25.
Wow!
His response was, I don't know, I'll be 26 in a few months. That's apparently his claim to fame.
But that was what year was that? That was a long time ago.
Oh,
was
it
that,
man. 1945. Like, oh, he was halfback, 45. He was the coach, 54.
Wow. Yeah. So that we got his season tickets taken away. So I just that he was in tears. I'm not kidding around. When he found out there was, you could see his eyes getting all watery. And I mean, I felt horrible. I had nothing to do with it.
He was also the player conditioning coach for the Cincinnati Reds in 1959. Sounds like he got him in some kind of condition, all right.
One final story on him. You know, back then you didn't make a lot of money being head coach at Notre Dame. He ended up making a boatload of money, him and his son. And I never really figured out how until one day I said, you know, wow, you guys got lucky in the stock market. I guess a lot of Notre Dame alum move on to Chicago to the stock market, and they do give tips from time to time. So, you know, they must have got a good tip or two, because they made a boatload of money, and they all love the coach. You know, if you're coach of Notre Dame, you're like royalty. You understand that, don't you? You're like overseas royalty, for crying out loud. All right, though, let's get to the Patriots. What's going on there, Brady? Because they had a pretty good draft.
Arnie, do you ever follow the sheet as it's written? Can you read what's at the very top, please, of the 5 o'clock hour?
Here's what's coming up this week.
Okay, what's underneath that?
Trivia, Burger Bar.
Yes, tomorrow, Trivia, Burger Bar, 7:30 to 9:30. And remember, mistake of the day, if you want to be in the running, you can get in, 802-655-6672. You can get that baseball cap thanks to Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, where they help small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. Now, Arnie, now it's time
now,
for your question.
There you go. Now, you see, there you go. You're catching up. You're a step behind me, but that's okay. Wow. What did you – all right, the Patriots draft, all right? A couple things about that. I'm surprised they did as good as well as they did. I'm not too excited about when, but, you know, I'm more of a meat and potatoes guy or more of a star guy. So give me the quarterbacks, give me the running backs, give me the wide receivers. Sony Michel reminds me of Eric Dickerson. I don't know if he's going to have as great of his career, but nice. This guy can turn it on different speeds like you've never seen. I've watched a lot of Georgia games. I love this guy. I think the Patriots got one hell of a running back, and they have not had a running back or drafted a running back this high, I think, since 2006. So it was about time. I told you this is the way they were going to go. That's exactly what they did. So I got to give him kudos for that. I think even the later guys, the kid from Miami, the wide receiver, going to come in, make an immediate impact with the team. Christian Sam from Arizona State, I think he's going to get some playing time. Duke Dawson from Florida is another guy that's going to step in right away and maybe become a starter. I think they plugged up a lot of holes and had a great draft here.
It's so funny because I'm like, another draft not getting what they needed. I wanted pass rushers, and I went, and they eventually came around to doing that. I wanted linebackers. They eventually came. But then I go online, and I just Google Patriots draft grades, and everyone, A-minus, B-plus, A. And I'm just like, really? I mean, I just looked at that, and I thought, all right, if you say so. And, of course, they did a great job masking the Garoppolo trade and now making it impossible to have any idea who they traded for. So that was kind of cute of them.
I found it, before we evaluated based on good or bad, I found it frustrating because I made an appointment viewing to, like, I watched every minute of the draft, but I made a point, oh, the Patriots are coming up. I had notepads out. I was ready to watch and write down exactly what they did. And they traded out of it almost every single round.
Which is something they always do, isn't
so
it?
It was so frustrating. They made 8 trades in all. The thing that I have the biggest grievance with the Patriots is the pick of the quarterback. Danny Etling, the quarterback out of LSU. And look, he's got an interesting story. He played 4 years for 4 different coaches. He played at 2 different programs. So he's got some unevenness in his career that leads you to believe maybe he'll be a better pro player than he was a college player. So that's fine. But you decided to move down repeatedly from the quarterback conversation to the point where I just thought you weren't going to take one. If you didn't think Lamar Jackson was good enough, and if you didn't think that Mason Rudolph was good enough, or Luke Falk, or Mike White, the kid from Western Kentucky, if you didn't think that any of them were good enough, then why not just not pick a quarterback at all? And that feels like a wasted pick to me. They don't even know if he's going to make the team. He might be a practice squad player. And Mel Kiper said, I don't even have him as a draftable player. Why not just sign him then as an undrafted free agent and use that pick on someone else?
No, you make a great point there. They probably could have got him after the draft. I don't know. Maybe they see something I don't see. I thought they were going to take I shouldn't have said that because I thought they were going to take a quarterback. I just thought it was going to be the kid from Virginia. So I thought they were going to take a quarterback. Unfortunately, I just got the wrong quarterback there. And they took the corner from Western Carolina, but I thought they were going to take the one from Iowa that ended up going to the Green Bay Packers. But overall, though, why take a quarterback if he was going to be there? You could sign him as an unrestricted free agent unless somebody else was going to sneak up and grab him. And they also got the tight end I thought they were going to take in the 3rd round. They waited to the last round also. So they did plug up their holes. They just went in the wrong direction. But we'll see if Belichick likes to be the smartest guy in a room. So maybe the kid from LSU works out after all. We'll have to wait and see.
Well, the fact that they waited till the 219th pick and the 250th pick to get a quarterback and a tight end may be good news. Maybe Gronk and Brady are going to stick around for more than just one more year.
The thing I found the most interesting, Arnie, and I think we've talked about this before, is this proves to me even more so that Belichick isn't going anywhere for a while, because
right.
a lot of the talk has been, oh, the Patriots are so well positioned for next year's draft, and they acquired an extra second-round pick. They acquired an extra third-round pick. They're going to get some compensation picks that plan out on being high in the losing Malcolm Butler and losing Nate Solder moves of this offseason. So they're well-positioned for next year, and whether that means next year they move up to go get a quarterback or whether they just use all of those picks next year, Belichick, if they're building for the future, I think Belichick's part of the future.
I have a theory on that. My thing is this. If you are married, let's say, for 6-7 years and you're getting divorced, and let's say the divorce takes, let's just say, 1 year for argument's sake, you don't take your girlfriend, your new girlfriend, after, let's say, you start dating after 8 months, around your kids until the divorce is final, okay? You wait for the divorce is final, and then she's out of your life, then you show around your new girlfriend, okay? I'm thinking they're not going to get serious about a new quarterback until Tom Brady is officially out. They're not going to show the new girlfriend, in this case the new quarterback, until Tom is gone and out of the picture, because I don't think he can handle it personally. So I think they're going to wait till he's out the door like the old wife and then bring in the new quarterback, whatever that year is going to be.
Well, that's what I said last week. What are the Patriots? Why do they need a quarterback? You know, and everybody was kind of like, well, of course they do. Their quarterback's 100 years old, but...
Well, eventually there's going to be a divorce here,
Brady.
Yeah.
I mean, but Rich, don't you as a fan want to know that the organization is in good hands when Brady leaves? Do you want to play? Do you want Brady to play until he's 44, have him eventually either fall off a cliff or retire, one of the two, and then you bring in an undrafted rookie and just hope that he turns out like RG3 did in year one, or Russell Wilson did in year one, or Carson Wentz did, and they're instantly ready to go? Or would you rather be like Jimmy Garoppolo was, where they've got a year, 2 years, 3 years in the system, and they're trained to walk in day one and play? Look, it's hit or miss as to who comes in and plays well right away versus who gets crushed, but I'd much rather set the guy up for success than just draft him and hope.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking Laletta maybe with maybe a third-round pick or something, but after that, apparently, there wasn't anybody. I mean, it sounds like Laletta was sort of the cliff, and after that, everybody just fell off of it as far as quarterbacks. But, yeah, that's another reason why I don't really get, you know, grabbing a quarterback like Etling, who nobody even considered going anywhere in the first couple of rounds, certainly. But I mean, once the best of the best went off the board, and I'm glad they didn't trade up to get one of them as far as quarterbacks go, I mean, it didn't make any sense for them to go with, you know, feeling like they had to pick somebody in the third round who shouldn't have gone, like an Etling, until the fourth or fifth or sixth round and force the issue, because I really believe Brady, knock on wood, has at least one more very good year left in him.
All right. By the way, let me crunch some numbers for you. I don't know what it means, but I'll crunch the numbers for you, and you can tell me what you think it means. According to Vegas, and last year, was it the over-under on the Patriots, 12.5 wins? Isn't that what it was, Brady?
Yes.
Because we were talking about maybe they could go undefeated. Well, this year for the Patriots, they have over-under 11 wins. Did the Patriots get a game and a half worse? But before you even answer that, there's only five teams projected to have double-digit wins, which is the lowest, I think, in the history of the NFL. So is there more parity? Did the upper echelon teams get worse like the Patriots? Is over under that 11 is about the lowest you'll ever see the Patriots in a long, long time. Do you jump on that over? 11 wins get you a push. So do you jump on that over? I don't know, but wow, that seems like a low number for the Patriots, who, you know, seem like they get 12 wins every year.
Right, but was this done pre-draft?
Because this is post-draft.
Oh, okay, because I was going to say you lose Solder and then you draft Isaiah Wynn. You lose Lewis and you draft Sony Michel.
This came out late last night. We were talking about it late last night. So this is the up-to-date version of the over-under. Only five teams, think about that for a second, with double-digit win totals out there, a lot of nines and a lot of eights and a lot of right there and then. It's amazing how they think there's a lot of parity going into this year in the NFL.
Well, I think from the Patriots standpoint, you have to look at it and say that Vegas looks at it and says, Buffalo made the playoffs last year. maybe they're a little better. Miami gets their quarterback back, maybe they're a little better.
Yes.
So you start to piece together some losses or a possible loss or two in the division just because
right.
the division has gotten better, then maybe that's where that accounts from. I'll say this. I am most excited about Duke Dawson, the DB out of Florida.
They traded up for him, didn't they?
Second round pick. I'm most excited for him. He's a guy who projects as a slot corner. We know how important the slot receiver has been, so therefore the slot corner is extremely valuable. He was the eighth best graded slot corner last year in college football. That's the guy that I'm most intrigued about seeing. Cyrus Jones has been injured and struggled as a defensive back. Johnson Bademosi was kind of ineffective and then now is gone. He's in Detroit, so they're in need of that position. I like what they did. Because remember, they brought in Jason McCourty to probably try to win that outside job vacated by Malcolm Butler. Well, Duke Dawson may be the guy who fills in the slot.
They passed on that guy. Remember I told you they were going to take Josh Jackson, the corner out of Iowa. I believe they passed, or actually was taken before they had a chance to take him. I thought that maybe the Patriots would go after him. Now you could see that they were looking to get corner rich. They wanted to stock up in that position. So hopefully that plugs up a lot of holes for them also. But I like Josh Jackson. Look for him with Green Bay. I liked him a lot.
And then you just look at the undrafted free agents they're giving tryouts to. They're giving it to a punter, a D tackle, two D tackles, wide receiver, another tight end, another running back.
Anybody we know any big names out there, wide receiver, tight end?
No, but from big schools, okay? They're getting a defensive tackle from Georgia that they're bringing in, a wide receiver from Oklahoma State, a D tackle.
Oh, the one that caught the guy caught most of Mason Rudolph's passes, is it?
Chris Lacy.
I don't know if he's the one or not.
Defensive tackle from LSU and a DN from Miami. So they're bringing in some big-name type players.
And Georgia is becoming the new Rutgers.
Yes.
For the Patriots.
And the Giants got a player from Georgia also, and a Carter, the linebacker.
I told you that, you know, once you – remember I gave you the analogy, you have steak and you want to eat another steak but you haven't had it in a long time? I said look for the Patriots. I thought they would go after the other running back. Out of Georgia. I'm like, they're going to take everybody from Georgia, for crying out loud, and they were on top of it. They must have loved what they saw out of Georgia this year. How about that? That's fantastic. But just one thing on Sony Michel, like I told you, my comparison, love him. Look for him to be just like an Eric Dickerson. All right, Brady, Monday. Yeah, you're laughing at that, aren't you, big boy? You like that,
I hope you're
you?
Right, my friend.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Coming up next, we'll get the Monday Mirages. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
And you thought the ESPN network hosts were opinionated.
Unsupportable opinion.
It's the Huddle with Rich Arnie and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
Let's go!
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. It's a Monday. 30th day of April. I can't wait to get ready to go past April. I'm Apriled out. I've had enough of it.
What's the difference? Every day is 75 and sunny for you, no matter what time of the year, isn't it? Out there.
That is true. That is so true. That is.
You could not have picked a better time. Although we had a couple of nice days right after you left, and I guess it's going to get better. But, man, you got it made being away from here right now.
But you have no idea what it takes for me to get dressed, leave this apartment, drive over to the beach, go play. It takes like an hour to do anything to get around in this town. You know, I was telling guys I could in Burlington, I can go to the Home Depot, the Walmart, the Market, the Shaw's, and still be back at my house in about an hour to hour 15 minutes. I couldn't do that in one full day in 24 hours here in L.A. It's so bad. I can't do that.
Well, you have seen Williston around midday on a Saturday.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that.
It's not pretty.
Please. No, okay.
It's not in Los Angeles.
Yes, no. Not Los Angeles.
Taft Corners is not L.A. I'll give you that.
Yes, because you miss one light. You go, the traffic. I'm going crazy out there. Oh. All right, time for Monday Mirages. Monday Mirages.
Are you done being obnoxious?
Well, you were a little late on the second.
No, I wasn't.
Yes, just a little bit.
No, I wasn't. Okay. Question one, all in all, you like what the Giants did in the draft, real or mirage?
What does that mean? Like a B? If I got a B, I like it.
Do you approve?
Not really. They got Saquon Barkley. That's the only thing I really approve of. I don't know how Will Hernandez is going to be from the worst Division I program I've ever seen in my life. Otherwise, they only had four picks after that. I don't know how many of them are going to make a difference this year. Certainly, the quarterback out of Richmond's not going to make a difference. I don't even know the kid McIntosh out of Miami is even going to make the team. So, No, I'm not going to say I'm happy. I don't think they had a good draft overall. I just like Saquon Barkley.
I'll say real, and he just named everything I was going to say. So, I mean, no, I don't worry about UTEP not being a very good team. I mean, I think Hernandez is going to help. You team him up on the left side with Solder, and you put Saquon Barkley in the backfield running through those two guys. And I think at least you've got something started as opposed to the last couple of years. Would have been those have been train wreck positions across the board for the New York Giants.
I'll say real. I didn't love the pick of Saquon Barkley. That's well stated by me and Arnie also that we didn't want them to take a running back that high. But I have to appreciate that Dave Gettleman stuck to what he said he believed in. He wanted a transformative talent at that number two pick. He thinks he got one. He wanted to rebuild this line both offensively and defensively. He used three of his six picks to do just that. He also addressed the quarterback position in getting Laletta out of Richmond. So all in all, I have to at least respect that Dave Gettleman did exactly what he did, or did exactly what he said he was going to do, and he believed in it. Question two, you're happy that the Patriots ended up taking a quarterback after all, real or mirage?
Oh, that's real. I mean, yeah, I'm happy whether they makes the team or not. At least it just shows that, you know, that they were thinking about a quarterback. You know what I mean? That they had it in the back of their mind like, oh, maybe I should take a quarterback with the last round because – Tom Brady is 110 years old. No, I'm happy they took a quarterback. I don't know if they took the right one. Like I said, I think I want them to take the kid out of Virginia. But at least it wasn't somebody that was a free agent draftee at the end, and it was an afterthought. Yeah, I am happy. I think that's real that they took a quarterback. He won't succeed, Tom Brady, but at least I'm happy they took one.
Well, I look at that as a mirage because what is Danny Etling going to do for you 3 years down the line? Is he the next Garoppolo? I mean, do you feel like he's going to eventually be able to come around to the point where he can just be inserted into a game when Brady gets hurt or in Garoppolo's case suspended and he's suddenly going to be the guy? I mean, you'll say he's a seventh round pick. Brady was a sixth round pick, the 199th round pick, but he's a once in a generation kind of lucky pick at that spot. I just don't think Danny Etling is suddenly going to be the next Tom Brady.
I'll say it's a mirage, Arnie. I'm happy. I think they needed a quarterback, but they passed on everybody who everybody thought had any chance of being any good. They could have gotten Lamar Jackson twice, didn't. They could have gotten Luke Falk, didn't. They could have gotten Riley Ferguson from Memphis. They could have gotten Chase Litton from Marshall. They could have gotten the kid from Toledo. They could have gotten Laletta. They could have gotten Mason Rudolph. They passed on all of them. If you were going to pass on all of them, then why waste the pick just to say you took a quarterback? If you didn't think anybody was any good, then just use the pick, get another position of need, and then go and sign one of any number of quarterbacks to go out and try to play for you. So, look, don't just take one to take one.
By the way, in keeping in tradition of Jimmy Garoppolo, Danny Etling, good-looking guy, 6'2", very strappy, good-looking guy, I'm sure, has a very good-looking girlfriend, too.
That's great. Which will be helpful since he'll have lots of time on his hands not playing for the Patriots.
Monday Mirage's question three. This is an interesting one. NFL free agency should occur after the draft, real or mirage? And the reason why I ask this is now you have all these free agents that sign places. And then you have all these teams that went and drafted young kids at their position. Like, think about a Jeremy Hill in New England. He signs in New England for $1 million, expecting to have a chance to make the roster and compete. The team drafts Sony Michel, and he's probably going to end up cut or released as a result of it. So that's why their conversation starts from. NFL free agency should start after the draft, real or mirage?
No, I'm going to say mirage on that. I think that the free agency should come first to help teams decide who they want to take in the draft. So just because they doubled up on a position, I feel bad for that free agent, and maybe they were just using him as an insurance policy. And I mean, it was deep running back draft, but no, I like it this way. I'm gonna stick with free agency first, then the draft. So I'm going to say mirage.
Boy, this one's tough. I'll go with real simply because, I had written down mirage here, but and then you mentioned Jeremy Hill. I mean, now what does he do? And he's not the only one. I'm sure there's a ton of guys across the league just like this. Basically, free agency and the draft are doing the same thing, where you are going after somebody to fill a need that your team has. And that's why it makes it difficult for me to be able to tell the difference. Chronologically, a Jeremy Hill type of situation, it would make sense. I'm going real barely.
I'll say mirage only because it would cause too much of a disruption in the league calendar as far as when mini camps are and all this. So you'd have to move the draft up. What you would do is you'd have to move the draft up, move the combine up, and then you'd have to have the draft. Then you'd have to start free agency, and just mini camp would be out of whack, and OTAs would be out of whack, and I'm sure there would be financial things would be out of whack, because if you did the draft first, what would your salary cap be and all that kind of stuff? So I get it from the player's standpoint, and I feel bad for guys like Jeremy Hill and I'm sure hundreds of others that signed a deal and now might be pushed out. But lukewarmly, I'll go with Mirage. Question four, Al Horford is the biggest factor for the Celtics as they try to top the 76ers in this series. Real or Mirage?
You know, Brady, I got to tell you, usually you do a great job. Bad question by Brady.
Oh.
Absolutely bad. Yeah, bad question by Brady.
Wow.
That's like saying, you know, is LeBron James the biggest factor for the Cavaliers?
What?
Of course he is. Look, of course Al Horford.
Brown, Tatum?
Well, no, let me explain something to you. It's not who's the biggest factor. It should be who's the X factor here. Who's the guy that needs the big game? Sure, you need Horford to, I don't know if he's going to go 13-70, but you need him to step up. That's easy. The X factor, though, is Marcus Smart. That's what the question should be. It's how he goes, is how the Celtics go. But if we're going to stick with Brady's questions, yes, I mean, Horford is the big factor. Yes, I'll say real on that. But bad question by you, Brady.
Yes,
I don't
he's
like
a
that.
Real tough guy 3,000 miles away. I think that's absolutely real, especially now that there's nobody left on the team that can get up and down the court with Jaylen Brown out. I would have said Brown just because you saw what he did when he was going off against Milwaukee. He could be that guy who can suddenly put up 33, 34 points for you and be a difference maker at the offensive end. But Horford's much more of a complete player, and you saw how dominating he was at home, at least, in the Milwaukee series. I think that's absolutely real. Does it matter? No, because I don't think the Celtics have a shot in this series.
I'll say it's Mirage, and I think it's Brad Stevens. Simply put, I think Brad Stevens' ability to put the offensive players in a great position to succeed and his ability to because Joel Embiid has had his lowest shooting percentage against any team this year against the Boston Celtics. Any team in the Eastern Conference is the Celtics, and I think that's partly because of what Stevens does.
All right, wait a minute. See, that makes to me a trick question. Of course
wow.
Brad Stevens is a it's a huge – I didn't realize Brad Stevens was an option here.
I told you it was a bad question.
Okay, I agree with you now. I've changed my mind. That's a terrible question. That's a trick question. Brad Stevens.
Question five, Yankees-Astros tonight will divert some of your attention from hockey and basketball. Real or Mirage?
Mirage, yeah. Zero. Matter of fact, if I could watch Yankees and Astros from my balcony – with my feet up, having a cold beverage, I don't think
stop.
I would.
Stop there.
No, zero. No, no, don't stop
no,
there.
No, I don't want to hear. I thought yeah. you were going towards Speedos and everything else.
No. But right. Let me tell you something. No, it will divert zero attention away from hockey and basketball. That is a mirage.
Yeah, this is, I mean, and I can't believe this is a Monday. I'm going to have that clicker in my hand and my feet up. I think I'll order a pizza.
Nice.
And but the Yankees-Astros would be choice number four. Of the four choices.
Wow.
Sox will be there, but for me, it's all, can the Bruins match the intensity that Tampa Bay is going to throw in their face tonight?
I'll say, because we got to get to break, I'll say it's Mirage. I'll check in on it, but it's not going to be any priority right. for me. Both games would have to be blowouts for me to turn it on, and I've got the baseball package, so I've got the ability to do so. It's interesting because it's a rematch of the ALCS, and it's two teams that could very well be in the ALCS again this year, but not tonight. Tomorrow, I'll make sure to make it some viewing, but not tonight. Arnie, we got to go to break.
All right, we'll go to break because coming up next, Steve Jones, play-by-play voice of the Penn State Nittany Lions. He's next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady. It's really sort of an addiction. 101.3 ESPN.
All right, welcome back here in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. It is Monday, and Arnie in Los Angeles living it up. And, Rich, we've been talking a lot about the NFL draft, and let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and find ourselves now. Steve Jones, he's the voice of Penn State football, so we talk about Saquon Barkley and the impact he can have on the Giants. Steve's with us now. Steve, how are you?
Great to be with you guys. How are you today?
We're good, Steve. Rich, we're going to start with this, though. Before we talk about football, we're going to throw a curveball at you, and this is fitting.
So to speak.
So You are also the play-by-play announcer for the State College Spikes of the New York Penn League. Did you know that Rich over here was the play-by-play voice of the Connecticut Tigers last year?
Very nice. Well done. You know, I mean, to get a good play-by-play job, great job down there. Were you down in Norwich?
Yeah. Norwich, for the whole summer, lived in a motel. It was classic, you know, play-by-play stuff that 21-year-olds do, but I happen to be 56, so, yeah.
Well, hopefully you got down to Mystic Seaport, at least made it worthwhile for you.
Well, it was funny because we didn't play you guys. Were you one of the state college reps at the All-Star game at Tri-City?
I did not. I did not go up to Tri-City. I actually went to Cape Cod. So.
Smart man. Considering it was raining the entire game, you didn't miss a thing.
No, I felt fine. But the All-Star game is here this year, here in State College.
That's right.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting because the last time they had it here in State College, one of the All-Stars was some guy named J.D. Martinez.
That's right. For Tri-City, I think, was at that point. So
for Tri-City and then Brock Holt for State College, and they're both in the starting lineup for the Red Sox.
Well, you don't have to go very far. It's funny because we didn't see you last year, but you don't have to go very far from your football job to your baseball job. The two parks are literally right across the street from each other, aren't they?
Exactly. It's an exhausting walk, but I'm willing to make it.
Hey, so, Steve, what do you think of your trips to Burlington to come up here for the Lake Monsters? You don't do it every year, but...
I love Burlington. I did a basketball game back in the Tom Brennan days up in Patrick Gym. Back in 1986, I did that game, December of 86. And then I've been up there to do the Spikes. And I love Centennial Field. You know, it goes up against the old, what is now soccer stadium. But back in the day, was actually the football stadium for the University of Vermont when Bateman was the quarterback before he transferred to Brown because they ended the program for the Catamounts. I wish Vermont had not ended football, but they did. So I love the Burlington area. I love Lake Champlain. I always have. I've gone up there on my own a couple times with my wife, and we've enjoyed it. It's just absolutely beautiful. And it turned out that the State College winner this year was just as long as Burlington.
And, Rich, this is the only show in America where you can talk minor league baseball, NFL football draft picks, and get a history lesson on your local college also. So,
that's exactly right.
Steve Jones, play-by-play voice of the State College Spikes in baseball, but also Penn State football. And as we said at the top, Giant fans are – a lot of people are split. A lot of people wanted the Giants to take a quarterback, but those who are happy about Saquon Barkley are really happy about Saquon Barkley. Tell us from your vantage point, how special is this guy?
Well, let's just look at it this way. For Eli Manning, he ends up getting two first-round picks out of this because he's going to get Odell Beckham Jr. back, and he's getting Saquon Barkley. He really has not had a really good running back behind him since Tiki Barber. With all due respect to him, Ott Bradshaw, Brandon Jacobs, Tiki Barber was a really good all-around back. Take Tiki Barber and then multiply that times five.
Wow.
Because, I mean, Saquon Barkley is an absolute freak. You're talking about 230 pounds. I guess at the combine he was 233, but he'll come into the Giants at 228 to 230. He runs a 4.33 40, has excellent hands. You're talking about a Le'Veon Bell type of back, except with better burst. He has better burst than Bell does. I mean, he'll attack the hole while Le'Veon Bell dances around until he finds a hole. And like Le'Veon Bell, he runs excellent routes. He is not just a float out of the backfield, circle out of the backfield guy. He'll run absolute routes along the way, which makes it very difficult for a linebacker or even a sub-package corner to cover him. And then he also has become outstanding in blitz pickup, which is what Bell is really good at as well. Ben Roethlisberger will be the first to tell you that Bell on blitz pickup is outstanding. Barkley had to work hard to do that because as a freshman, he wasn't very good at it. He worked hard at it, got better his sophomore year, was really good this year. And on the game-winning touchdown pass in the final play of the game at Iowa that Trace McSorley threw to Juwan Johnson,
yeah.
It was Barkley that stoned Josie Jewell, who was picked by Denver in the draft, stoned him right in the hole, and because of him, that's how the play happened.
Steve, was it obvious right from the start with Barkley for you as the play-by-play guy?
Yes. It was after the second practice, because I get to go to practices. After the second practice, Jack Hand, who's my broadcast partner, called me. And he said, Steve, I'm going to be coming up on Thursday. He says, what should I look for? I said, watch 26. He says, okay. I said, that's Barkley. And Jack came in, and he looked at me 5 minutes in. He looks over. He says, whoa. I said, yeah, whoa. You could tell right away that he was a cut above. There's just certain guys along the way that you look at, and you can tell right away they're a cut above. For example, Sean Lee with the Dallas Cowboys. You could tell right away when you watched him in training camp, he was a cut above his freshman year. I mean, that kind of guy, that kind of player, and he brings everything to the table, but he also brings with him a work ethic. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm always somebody that really appreciates somebody that does not take their talent for granted. Barkley does not take his talent for granted.
Steve, I guess I've got a two-part question here. Now, you were not the Penn State broadcaster at the time I'm going to go back to, but you were a Penn State graduate, so I know you've been following the program. Penn State has had a long history going back into the 90s of some really good high-value running backs in the draft, from Curtis Enos to Kajana Carter, who was number one in the draft. Where does Barkley kind of rank next to those guys in Penn State lore?
To me, he is the best running back I've seen here since Kurt Warner.
Okay.
Kurt Warner, and I go back to Kurt Warner. And Kurt, of course, was the second overall pick in the draft taken by the Seattle Seahawks. And Warner was an excellent pass receiver. Warner was a great kickoff return guy, tremendous running back. Barkley's had better durability than Kurt had, because Kurt had a problem with cramping when he was here at Penn State. And then, ironically, his second year in the league, they were playing a Monday afternoon game on Labor Day against the Browns, and he tore his knee. And Kurt still came back and gained 1,000 yards the season after that. But I think he's the best runner since then. And look, I've seen Larry Johnson, I've seen Kajana, I've seen Enos, I've seen Blair Thomas, I've seen Dozier, I've seen Warner. And he's the best I've seen since Kurt.
I guess getting more modern now and more relatable for more of our listeners, you've also seen, as you mentioned, Le'Veon Bell in the Big Ten, Ezekiel Elliott in the Big Ten. Where does Barkley rank to those guys?
I'll relate to your audience there. Let's see. Where does he relate to those guys? I mentioned he compares to Bell, and although when Bell was at Michigan State, though, he's heavier. Bell really, I think Bell's lost, 15 to 18 pounds since he got into the league, because he knew he had to make himself quicker. Although he was an excellent athlete at Michigan State, he was about a 235-pound tailback, and he would hurdle people. But he slimmed down because he knew he had to. It made himself quicker. Barkley's a faster version of Bell. Elliott was a great blocker in college. The Ohio State runs its read option a little different than some teams. When the quarterback keeps it, that running back becomes the lead blocker into the hole. Elliott was outstanding in that role. Elliott also a really good pass receiver, but he doesn't run routes. He's a circle and float out of the backfield guy. And Elliott runs with power, but again, Barkley has more speed than he does.
Steve, as a guy whose most exciting and biggest college football experience of my life is about 1,000 people at a NESCAC game on a Saturday afternoon at Middlebury, I could not believe Beaver Stadium. I've never seen anything like it. It was completely empty because I was there for a Spikes game, obviously, next door. But, yeah. I mean, the press box is literally bigger than our UVM gymnasium up here, Patrick Gym. I mean, what is that place like on Saturday? I just stood there, looked at it, and I couldn't even imagine what the atmosphere must be like.
Well, it's funny because I mentioned J.D. Martinez earlier. They did, for the 2009 New York Penn League All-Star Game, they did the reception in Beaver Stadium. And I was standing next to J.D. Martinez, and he looks over at me, and he says, man, I can't believe this one. This is one of the greatest thrills of my life.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, wait till you hit the game-winning home run in Game 7 at Fenway, pal.
Yeah.
That will surpass it. But look, the atmosphere is, especially when it's a night game and a whiteout game and a big stakes game, it means there have been moments where the press box shakes a little bit. Yeah. And Jack Hamm one time looked over at me in an Ohio State game in 2005, and he says, is this place okay? And I said, geez, Jack, I'm an announcer, not an engineer. I don't know.
Let's hope so. Yeah.
But, you know, when you're in this league and you get to do Beaver Stadium, Ohio State, Michigan, I've done a couple of Rose Bowls.
Wow.
I mean, it really is. There isn't a moment that you're in there that you don't appreciate that you're in a big-time, big-league atmosphere like that. And you know the stakes are high when Penn State's playing.
Steve, we'll get you out of here on this. You talk about the big stakes of Penn State football in the Rose Bowl. I know the Spikes have been in the New York Penn League Championship, so more big stakes. You are also a professor at Penn State. How the heck do you have time to be a teacher also? Are you canceling class like every other day?
No, I only have to teach on Monday mornings.
Oh, okay.
It's a Monday morning at 8 o'clock class. And, I mean, needless to say, there are times I look out and I think they're all still asleep. But, you know, I've enjoyed it. There are a lot of people in the business that are now working that end up going through the class. Those are the ones that I term that beat the odds. So, you know, but that includes, for example, Michael Robinson on NFL Network. Mike took my class.
Wow.
You know, and, you know, we had him on the blue-white game, Brian. We do the scrimmage. I mean, it's 71,000 in a scrimmage here 8-9 days ago. So if the USFL had had that kind of attendance, they'd still be in business. All right? But they had 71,000. So we had Mike on the broadcast. The first thing he says, "Ah, my professor, I learned everything from you." I says, "Mike, don't admit that."
Hey.
I said, "Just take credit for what you're doing." But I enjoy it. Look, it's great being around young people. I mean, young people keep you young. And so between doing football and basketball and NIT championships and Rose Bowls and teaching class and the Spikes, you're around young people all the time, and I think it keeps you young.
Steve Jones, play-by-play voice, Penn State football. We'll see you up here in Burlington. And as Arnie,
but not this year.
Not this year. No. We'll see you up in Burlington at some point. And as Arnie says, Rich will be the guy buying you lunch. He's a big deal.
Look forward to it very much. One of the truly beautiful areas in the world.
Thank you, Steve. We appreciate it.
You bet, guys.
Michael Robinson, who he tells the story about, former Seahawks fullback, and he also played quarterback at Penn State, he told one of the most hysterical one-line jokes ever at Super Bowl Media Day. I'll have to share that story. We'll get Arnie back in the fold. We'll have Last Story Standing, and it's a good local story about the Lake Monsters. That's next, 101.3 ESPN.
It's time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, boy, this show just flew on by, my friends. Good job with Steve Jones. With Brady, let's get to the Last Story Standing. What do we got?
Yeah, the Vermont Lake Monsters, they need your help, Rich, and they need all of our help.
Okay.
Because they want to win the Minor League Baseball Logo Mania Contest. Yeah. This is a big deal.
It's a cool one, too.
Yeah, it's put on by Baseball America, so it's a fan-fueled contest to help select the best minor league cap based on your votes, and they've got a 64-team bracket-style challenge. The link to vote for Champ and the Crew is at 1013ESPN.com.
And check it out. It's a really cool logo. Champ is in the middle of the state of Vermont,
which is
really neat.
I am actually pumped about it. This is a new alternate hat they're going to be wearing this year. We've seen different variations of the Lake Monster hat, the one where it's just the giant eyes and giant Champ's head that's coming out.
Players love wearing that.
We've seen the small where it's Champ kind of swimming in the water. This is a new one where it is the state of Vermont with just kind of Champ's eye in it. This is a very cool one. I'm going to get that hat.
All right. My last story standing was, did you see the guy that broke the record and rode the 80-foot wave? I don't know if you saw a video of that, guys.
I heard about it, but I didn't see it.
Oh, it's insane. It's like a death wish. That thing falls on top of him, you're dead. I'm sorry to say. Thank God it didn't, and he rode that wave. But, boy, oh, boy, that's one scary sight. I got to tell you that. There's no doubt about that one. Good job. It was just cruising along. Any interns to thank today, Brady, or what?
No interns. We're down to one intern until June 1st.
Wow.
So
slacking.
We're just going to get all your food, Arnie.
Yeah.
Well, Arnie's not here, so now the food comes to us.
I may have to go back to In-N-Out Burger today. I'm gaining weight like it's going out of style.
I've got to do yoga tonight.
Oh, wow. Knock yourself out on
one
that.
One of us goes to In-N-Out Burger. The other one goes to yoga.
We won't tell you which one's which. For Brady and for Rich, I'm Artie. Champlain Valley Game Night coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.